Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, installing energy-efficient windows to help lower utility bills year-round. More at callmosby.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Tuesday, April 22nd. I'm Abby Larico. The University of Missouri system has provided guidance on how faculty and staff should comply with the Trump administration's efforts to deport some college students. But the order has its critics.
Things like this are really not to the benefit of students.
A look at how the universities will react to ICE and other government agencies coming up after this news on The Gateway. St. Louis Catholics are celebrating the life of Pope Francis, who died Monday at Casa Santa Marta in the Vatican. Francis was the first Latin American and Jesuit pope. He succeeded Pope Benedict in 2013 and was known for his charitable works and efforts to reform the Catholic Church. Maureen Wongard is Assistant Director for Graduate Student Initiatives at St. Louis University, and she met Pope Francis in 2022 at the Vatican. She says it was an inspiring experience and that his tenure helped change the tone of the church.
I would hope that a future pope would continue that message that we are all called to be children of God, to serve God, to make the world a better place.
Cardinals will hold a conclave to select Francis's successor. A Metro East City Council approved a nearly $300 million mixed-use development last night, and as St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports, O'Fallon City leaders believe the residential, retail, and entertainment space could be transformative for their city of 32,000.
The development will be known as Park Place. It's located in the northwest part of the city. The O'Fallon City Council unanimously passed 7 ordinances and 2 resolutions, all tied to the development. Leaders say it's one of the biggest investments in the city's history. Councilman Roy Carney represents the ward where most of Park Place will be built. He says the housing portion is especially important because O'Fallon doesn't have much opportunity for starter homes.
This is going to give them a place to live and stay in O'Fallon. And I think that's definitely a plus, because that's a city that quits growing, starts dying.
Building construction is expected to start in a year, and it's scheduled to be complete by 2033. In O'Fallon, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
A charity organization created in part by the Speaker of the Illinois House is collecting donations from lobbyists, businesses, and unions that could benefit from his decision-making in Springfield. That's according to an investigation by the Chicago Sun-Times. The charity is Democratic House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch's Black Excellence in Blue. Sun-Times reporter Mitchell Armentrout says donations to charities are recorded differently than campaign donations.
Just once a year, they have to tell the public how much money they've raised, but they don't necessarily have to say who has given them that money.
Armentrout says those who have given to the charity stand to benefit from Welch's legislative decision-making. Welch says the charity is, quote, not political in any way. Detainees serving in the ServeSafe program at the St. Louis City Justice Center now have the skills to apply for food industry jobs when released. St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wembley reports.
The program was introduced earlier this month, and 7 detainees received certificates Monday afternoon. 62-year-old Marion Keenan became teary-eyed after not only receiving his certificate, but also learning he'll be released soon. He's been in custody at the CJC for nearly a year on trespassing charges.
I have 12 days left. I'm going to try for any kitchen that'll take me, and through this program here and through Slate, they're going to try to get me into something, and I don't know exactly where, but they'll help me.
The addition of ServeSafe is the latest effort to increase programming at the CJC. Certified participants are now qualified to apply for jobs at restaurants, grocery stores, and other food service companies. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
New startup companies in the ag tech space are deciding to move to St. Louis and grow here. STLPR's Eric Schmid reports it's part of efforts over the last 2 years by the nonprofit 39 North Ag Tech Innovation District to develop resources targeted for new companies.
Those efforts are paying off, with companies locating here in the past year or bubbling up from existing plant science expertise. Martin Salinas is the chief technology officer of Moolec, a company working to create genetically modified plants that produce more and different proteins. He says 39 North was their first point of contact for the region.
All of the spaces available in that district were too large for us, but they were the one connecting us with people at Cortex and at the Missouri State agencies to check for opportunities or incentives, so on and so forth.
Moolec now has lab space in the Cortex Innovation District, and Salinas says a big reason why they chose St. Louis over Indianapolis or Chicago is the communication with people here. I'm Eric Schmid, St. Louis Public Radio.
UN President Moon Choi has signed an executive order outlining a process for law enforcement compliance. It was passed early last month as Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, agents are going to campuses around the country to detain those whose speech the Trump administration disagrees with. Amina Jenkins reports on how the UN policy works for both staff and students.
Executive Order 51 outlines the process for faculty to address what the order calls, quote, non-routine contacts with government agencies, including law enforcement. The order requires faculty to contact their supervisor and the UM Office of General Counsel and wait for further directions. During the MU General Faculty Council meeting on April 2nd, President Choi said the order was drafted because of faculty requests for more guidance.
What do we do if we have ICE individuals come in and try to apprehend one of the members of the class?
Tom Warover is the chair of the MU Faculty Council. He says the intercampus faculty cabinet received the first draft of the order on February 13th and were asked to collect feedback from their respective councils and senates.
I'm frankly grateful that we were given the opportunity to give feedback because there's nothing that says the president has to get feedback.
Teresa Torres, the chair of the UMKC Faculty Senate, says their group also asked for clarification on protocol. The situations faculty may encounter also depends on the kind of immigration violation ICE agents allege. Detentions for criminal immigration violations, such as unlawful entry to the U.S., are carried out by judicial warrants signed by a judge. However, detentions for civil immigration violations, such as overstaying a visa after being lawfully admitted, are executed by administrative warrants that are signed by an ICE official. Bill Niffen is an immigration attorney in Kansas City. He says the policy's definition of a, quote, properly executed warrant most closely resembles a judicial warrant, which most ICE agents don't have. Additionally, neither a judicial nor administrative warrant often includes any information about searches and seizures.
An administrative warrant almost never has that. It just says, hey, we have authority to arrest John Doe because we think John Doe did an immigration violation.
Niffen says that lack of knowledge and policy language about what different warrants mean may leave room for potential points of conflict between faculty members and ICE agents. The order says it, quote, promotes cooperation while also complying with laws protecting student, faculty, and staff records. However, Niffen points out the policy is aimed more at faculty and staff than students.
Things like this are really not to the benefit of students. I think that this is designed to give an advantage to ICE, to give an advantage to the government, and it's at the expense of the students.
On March 25th, Tufts University student Romeza Ozturk was detained by plainclothes ICE agents outside of her Massachusetts home. The State Department canceled her visa, with many believing it to be the result of an op-ed she published last year calling for the university to divest from Israel. News reports have since indicated such incidents are causing fear amongst international students across the country if they engage in any form of oppositional political speech.
International students at MU told me that they are cautious today. They expressed the reasons for students getting their visas revoked are very unclear.
In early March, the State Department began revoking several student visas for engaging in what the administration calls, quote, destabilizing acts. However, some students have had their visas revoked due to minor offenses, such as unpaid traffic tickets. International students at the University of Missouri, Missouri State University, and UMKC are among those who have had visas revoked. Executive Order 51 does not specify where on campus law enforcement agents may go to detain faculty, staff, or students. The UM Office of General Counsel declined to comment on jurisdiction, saying only that the school will, quote, follow and obey all applicable state and federal laws and regulations. A UM spokesperson declined to comment on which federal and state laws and regulations might apply. I'm Amina Jenkins.
That story comes to us from member station KBIA in Columbia. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.